Hi, this is Steve Nerlich.
Why cheap astronomy?
Yeah, why? And this is Dear Cheap Astronomy, episode 132, Mining Again. Yes, again. Here at Cheap Astronomy, we are running with the conviction that not too much is going to happen in space without some economic incentives to chase. Right now, nearly everything is being driven by government investment and grants, but that may not last forever. So perhaps there's room for some independent thinking here. Dear Cheap Astronomy, are rubble pile asteroids easier to mine? Rubble pile asteroids are a collection of rocks that have accreted together under their mutual gravity, but the object they form isn't massive enough for gravity to compress it into one unified object. Instead, the rocks that gather together remain as individual rocks. So, from a mining perspective, that's an advantage in that you could just pick up individual rocks without needing drilling or explosives. However, from a prospecting perspective, it's a disadvantage since a rubble pile is just a collection of rocks with lots of gaps between them, which makes it hard to estimate from a distance what those rocks are composed of. Our existing classification of asteroids into clay, rock, or metal is largely based on measurement of their mass and size, and hence their density, as well as their overall appearance, where shiny ones suggest they're metal and non-shiny ones suggest they're not metal. That is pretty much the level of sophistication we work with. So, a low-density rubble pile that has a patchy appearance could be composed of high-value platinum-palladium ore, or it could just be multiple chunks of clay. You really don't know until you get a close-up view. Rubble pile asteroids are generally small, less than 1 kilometer in diameter, and they're not just random collections of rocks. It's thought that most rubble pile asteroids are probably accreted debris from an earlier asteroid collision. So where a rubble pile is from a common source, it's likely to have a common composition as well. We've sent spacecraft to various near-Earth rubble pile asteroids, including Ryugu, on which JAXA's Hayabusa 2 landed and collected a sample, and also Bennu, on which NASA's OSIRIS-REx collected a sample without actually landing by just reaching out and grabbing something with an extended arm. The Ryugu sample was returned to Earth in December 2020, and the Bennu sample was returned in September 2023. Incidentally, having sent its sample back to Earth, the renamed OSIRIS-APEX spacecraft is now on its way to do a flyby of the asteroid Apophis in 2029. It's worth noting that Apophis is only 300 meters in diameter, but is not a rubble pile, since it has quite a high density and all the features of a stony silicaceous asteroid. So despite its small size, it's more likely to be a chunk of solid rock than a rubble pile. The asteroid 1998 KY26 that Hayabusa 2 is going on to visit after its encounter with Ryugu is really small at just 30 meters in diameter, but it's spinning so fast that it can't possibly be a rubble pile asteroid either, or it would have spun itself to bits. Itokawa, which the original Hayabusa visited, is peanut-shaped, about 300 meters long, and definitely is a rubble pile, which the original Hayabusa sampled a few grains from and returned them to Earth in 2010. Itokawa is a rubble pile of silicaceous origin, while Ryugu and Bennu are both carbonaceous. The classification indicates the nature of the primary object or objects that they are post-collision fragments of. But anyway, as far as mining potential goes, none of these rubble pile asteroids that we have observed up close have obvious economic value. All of them do have a bit of water, mostly mixed into mineral compounds, which is potentially extractable, but the real value of space-based water lies in it supporting more space travel as a fuel source and a keeping people alive source rather than being an end in itself. A metallic rubble pile asteroid would be a better mining prospect, though we're yet to positively identify any of those. Of course, the option of indiscriminately crashing lots of rubble pile asteroids on the moon so that you can sort through their remains at your leisure would be great, but attaching a rocket engine to a rubble pile is just going to break up the rubble pile rather than diverting the course of the asteroid. On the bright side, a rubble pile asteroid that might collide with Earth will readily break up in the atmosphere, hence spreading and dispersing its kinetic energy before impact. So potentially we could just leave them be, or go visit some to pick off any good bits that have commercial value. It is very likely that asteroid mining will involve a number of different strategies. So we might be spot-picking bits off rubble piles, while any denser objects that need breaking up could be crashed on the moon and perhaps in the future on Mars.
This is the middle bit.
We are living in the very early days of asteroid prospecting, and we're also learning some basic techniques about moving small ones around. So there is a path forward. But once we do start digging and ore refining, another challenge awaits.
Dear Cheap Astronomy, how do we get mining products back to Earth? The current narrative on space mining seems to go in two directions. One direction is about in situ resource utilization, where there's no doubt it's a lot cheaper to source water from space than to launch it from Earth, and a similar principle applies to most building materials like steel, concrete and glass. The mathematics of in situ resource utilization makes perfect sense, but begs the question of what the economic incentives are to build dwellings in space and source water from space to support people in space, as well as to support agriculture and the making of rocket fuel. If we can't identify what those economic incentives are, then we're just saying that we're going into space so we can go into space. The other more pragmatic direction that this narrative goes in is that we go to space to mine valuable materials and bring them back to Earth. If there's a profit in it, then everyone will start looking for efficiencies and economies, which might include building off-planet hostels for the miners and support staff, which means you could then benefit from in situ resource utilization. Anyhow, a key part of this supply chain story is that once you have a refined chunk of, say, asteroid-derived platinum, which is ready for sale, how do you actually get it to market down on the Earth's surface? You could have a vehicle like a space shuttle, which is launched from Earth, ideally with a hold full of space-bound cargo that you unload in orbit, while refined platinum is loaded aboard for the return trip. However, platinum is heavy stuff, so there are limits to how much you can land in this way. The advantage of a space shuttle or an automated SpaceX-style vehicle that can do retro rocket landings is that you immediately get your payload to a purpose-built base where you might have a truck waiting to move it on to the next point in the supply chain. The disadvantage of this approach is that these powered landings can't manage a lot of payload mass. Or to put it another way, you're expending an awful lot of fuel to land a lot of mass that isn't actually payload. So a better approach might be to do unpowered landings, which allows a lot more of the landed mass to be payload. To protect the integrity of the payload, you'd still want a heat shield, which will also usefully slow the payload's descent, though it won't be enough on its own to enable a soft landing. A chunk of platinum could certainly survive a hard landing intact, but it would be hard to convince the surface population that dropping high-speed projectiles from orbit is in any way safe. So really, you'll need a parachute, and probably a landing site in a very remote area. If you are just landing large chunks of platinum, you don't need a pressurized capsule. Indeed, if you're landing in the desert, rather than splashing down on water, you don't even need a capsule. Just an aerodynamic framework that can hold your payload, heat shield and parachute together. You'll also need a parachute deployment system and a transponder so you can track your payload. So that means a battery and an electrical system as well. But that is about it. And after you unload the payload, all those remaining bits are either reusable or recyclable. But that said, there might also be opportunities for in-situ resource utilization. So for example, if we did establish a mining refinery on the moon, you could launch your refined platinum derived from crashed asteroids along with a heat shield made of a mix of mining waste and lunar regolith. And of course, launching this in the moon's lower gravity would take a lot less fuel than launching the same mass from Earth. There's also space junk in Earth orbit, which offers a source of some metals, and otherwise it would just be a good thing to get all that junk out of orbit if it's feasible and cost-effective to integrate this process into your space mining supply chain. Of course, a lot of this thinking is pretty much science fiction, or at least very expensive advanced engineering that no one is really likely to invest in without some small-scale proof-of-concept projects that convincingly demonstrate there's really a profit to be made.
This is the end bit.
So, there you go. There's gold out there, and there's more than just gold. It's still a bit beyond our current technological capability to access, and it's mostly beyond our current stated intentions for space exploration. But it's unlikely we'll ever do much of the latter without doing the former. To really explore intensively, we really do need some economic incentives beyond just curiosity and science. But that's it for another episode of Dear Cheap Astronomy. If you've got a space science question, or you just want to incentivize your curiosity, why not write to cheapastro@gmail.com and we'll explore it all with you. Thanks for listening. Steve Nalick, Cheap Astronomy.